Okay. Would everyone please take their seats and come back to order? We have one more item on the afternoon agenda. That is item number 12, our wildlife interaction rules. This is a briefing and a public hearing. Much anticipated. We have Dave Ware, our game division manager in our wildlife program, here to help us understand the issues before us. Dave?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the Commission, again for the record, my name is Dave Ware. I'm the game division manager for the Department of Fish and Wildlife. And Tammy, I think I'm frozen. Oh, there we go.
No. That's good.
So just kind of a real quick background. The legislature did a fairly significant overhaul of the statutes associated with wildlife conflict back in 2009. As a result, the commission promulgated rules as part of that overhaul in 2010. And then, of course, we adopted the Wolf Management Plan in 2011. We did come back actually last year in November and started to look at some review of the wildlife conflict rules, but tabled most of those pending the legislation or the legislative session. And so as a result of the this past year's legislative session, we did get further direction with some additional changes to the interaction rules, or that require changes to the interaction rules. And of course, that's why we're here today for the hearing, and anticipate rule adoption in October. So, kind of the quick background. So, most of the rules that we have in front of you, they're not all of the, or they don't include the entire chapter of 230, 236, but many of the individual pieces within that chapter. And so definitions, human interactions and conflict resolution, killing wildlife causing property damage, these are all amendments. A new one, which is killing wolves attacking domestic animals. The intent here is to make the emergency WAC that was promulgated earlier this year into a permanent WAC. Also includes payment for damage to livestock and domestic animals, the application procedure, and dispute resolution. And so those are the ones we'll be going through this evening, this afternoon. So I'm also going to talk a little bit about the need for changes. And, of course, a lot of them came from our Wolf Management Plan. There were several parts of the plan that were not necessarily consistent with what was both in statute as well as what was in rules. And so so that drives some of our decisions or recommendations. In addition, like I said, this past year in Gross Substitute Senate Bill 5193 passed, which also had required several changes to our rules. We also need to make our permanent or our emergency rule permanent. And then there's a few places where, since the rules were open, we just took advantage of the opportunity to do some cleanup. So under definitions, by far the biggest issue, and I'm sure you're going to hear about it this evening, this afternoon, is we under definitions, we defined attack. When we did the emergency rule, this was one of the issues that came up quite a bit, was that in the emergency rule, we used the term attack, or allowed somebody to kill a wolf that was attacking their domestic animals, but the term wasn't defined. So the feeling was that, the concern was that that was just left too much open for interpretation. And so the current definition says that attack means that there's evidence to support the fact that animal-to-animal contact has occurred or is immediately imminent, and the animal is in the attack posture or mode. The concern, or one of the concerns, is that this differs from the Wolf Plan, which defines attack as biting, wounding, or killing. I think the rationale for that difference in discussions and debate at the legislature as well was that it just didn't seem reasonable to ask a person to wait until a wolf was causing physical damage to their pet or livestock before they could protect it through lethal means. that killing a wolf and or killing a wolf catching or caught in the act of attacking a domestic animal very seldom occurs, and because of that, it shouldn't inhibit recovery. We also define domestic animal, and again, that was part of the debate and also included in the legislation. 5193 talks about domestic animals, but also in the letter that you received from several key legislators encouraging you to support an emergency rule, it talked about domestic animals as well. So those were that's the rationale for defining domestic animal, or a lot of it. In addition, that's what I was talking about. 5193 talks about compensating for losses, of course, requiring that it's a non-state funding source. Again, this differs from the Wolf Plan, because the plan only allows for compensation or killing of a wolf attacking livestock, not domestic animals. And it defines livestock as cattle, sheep, horses, pigs, mules, llamas, goats, and guarding or herding animals. And again, the rationale for that is that currently state funding is limited to cattle, sheep, and horses, although we are applying for federal funding that would allow for additional or payment compensating for livestock losses that are more consistent with the plan. And obviously, there's always potential to get additional fund sources that might allow for compensating for other domestic animals. But at this point, we don't know of any and don't have any. And again, the part about killing a wolf attacking domestic animals would allow all citizens the ability to protect their pets and livestock. So that was the definitions. In the conflict resolution rule, which ends in 040, we did amend the language to allow compensation for property that would include domestic animals based on the constraints of the funding entity. So we will compensate, or we can compensate, depending on if we have the funding and if the funding specifically allows it. Again, that comes from the bill that passed last session. And again, the plan only prescribes a specific list of livestock. The next rule, 051, in this one we amended language quite a bit for clarification, attempted to eliminate the term commercial in reference to livestock, but also allowing the killing of game animals attacking domestic animals. And of course, that was consistent with the bill regarding wolves, and we just expanded it to other game animals, or not other game animals, but to game animals. And again, the plan only dealt with wolves. So here's the new rule, 052, and the intent was to make the emergency rule permanent. Again, it differs from the plan. The plan requires a permit for lethal removal, and the authority is for livestock and not domestic animals. And the rationale, again, from all the discussion, was that it just didn't seem reasonable to allow a person to protect their livestock during an attack, but not their pets or other domestic animals. And again, attacks are very infrequent, and it would be very difficult for a person to anticipate an attack and request a permit from the agency prior to an attack. For 060, which has to do with wildlife control operators, and 110, which has to do with commercial crops, those were some places where we just looked to clean up some of the language in those regulations, and I'm not going to go into those, but they're not very controversial, but if there's questions, I can certainly answer them. In 200, this is the payment for domestic animal losses. So we did amend the language to delete the term commercial, consistent with the new statute. We use market value as how we're going to determine the value of that person's loss, the livestock loss. But we're also incorporating the possibility and the conditions for claims for such things as greater than normal losses and reduced weight gains. Still on 200, the rationale is, again, to make this rule consistent with the recent legislation. 210, again, drop the term commercial, replace livestock with domestic animal, establish and clarify the livestock payment conditions or how the payments would be made, and its consistency again. And then the last one is 400, and this one, the only thing, this is the title here is incorrect, application for compensation. This actually has to do with appeals of a determination by the agency. And so this one, we are amending the language that would create the review committee that would help us review and deal with appeals of a claim. And at this point, we're looking at using our Wolf Advisory Group to help us do that. And so the language in there was revised to basically to allow the department to appoint members of that committee. I do have a few floor amendments recommendations. And on page 14, WAC 052, I'm recommending that we reinsert the language under 1A that talked about Eastern Washington. And so that language will read, as part of our recommendation, this section applies to the Eastern Washington Recovery Region and those areas of the state that meet or exceed 4 breeding pairs per recovery region as identified in the State Wolf Conservation and Management Plan, and does not apply to any area of the state where the gray wolf is listed as endangered or threatened under the Endangered Species, the Federal Endangered Species Act. Another one on 052, page 15. I'm recommending that we add a subsection 4. This one would read, the director may terminate the authority of this rule by emergency action if 2 or more wolves are killed in a year while wolves are classified as endangered or protected. And then one final one. This is in WAC 232-36-200 on page 23. I'm recommending that we delete the words domestic animals and insert the word livestock. And that sentence will now read, the department is authorized to pay the market value for the livestock lost, the market value of reduced weight gains, and no more than $10,000 to the livestock owner per claim. And for this one, there really are, all of these are the result of some of the comments that we've received from various stakeholders. And I think there's still a lot of concern out there, and some folks maybe didn't understand the process, but also maybe didn't think about some of our comment deadlines, and so we did receive quite a few comments and suggestions after what we normally have as a deadline for getting ready for a commission meeting, and so I couldn't respond to those in your notebooks, but we did end up making a few amendments based on those. And on this particular one, there really isn't any funding for domestic or for compensation for domestic animals besides livestock, and there were several concerns expressed about the precedents and expectations that it might create if we had that language in the rule. As I mentioned, we have received quite a few recent comments, and a lot of folks still have some concerns, and so I'm sure you'll we'll be refining our recommendations over the next couple of weeks in preparation for the October commission meeting with our final revised proposals. Take any questions.
Great. Director Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Dave, could you go back to the second floor amendment that I believe was shown on, will be on page 15.
There we go. So this was consistent with with what's in the Wolf Management Plan, and we just wanted to clarify that that the commission was authorizing you to do this. It does use the term may, and I know that the plan says would consider, so this would still facilitate that.
Okay. And the second thing doesn't have anything to do with your presentation. In reading some of the comment letters that we've received, it seemed like there was some confusion about where we were in the process relative to this rule. In some of the comment letters, it seemed to suggest that the commission was going to make a decision today and that the public comment was closed. In one letter, I think there was a reference to July 9th as being the last day that written comments would be accepted. You just referenced in your remarks something about for another couple of weeks. So could you speak to where we are in the public comment period relative to the 102? What additional opportunities the public has to provide either written comments, understanding that this is the public comment period, so verbal comments directly to the commission, this is the meeting to do that, with the understanding that they would take action in October. Obviously, they're free to change that and provide additional opportunity for oral comments later if they wish, but under the current rule, a process is designed such that the public hearing is today. But specifically, going back to the question about written comments, when is the deadline? And then understanding that after that deadline occurs, there would be some opportunity for us to do some review of those comments internally and potentially propose changes to what's in the 102 as appropriate.
Yeah, I think you described it very well. So that, I mean, that technically we have satisfied the requirements of the code reviser in terms of how we solicit, take comments, and how the commission moves forward with a decision. And so that was the deadline for, and one of the things it says is that you must post a deadline. And so we've done that. We posted a deadline of July 19th. But typically, I mean, we've done this many, many times. We always get comments that come in a little later than that, and typically we try to convey those to the commission, especially if they've differed from what we've already received. But with the process that we have in place of having a hearing, usually one commission meeting, and then making the decision at a second commission meeting, we also are able to, as you described, work with some of the folks that submitted those some of those comments, and if there's still some things that we think are unresolved, then we still have that opportunity to go work with them to resolve them. Doesn't mean that we necessarily open up an official additional comment period, but we could do that as well.
So there was also some suggestion in one or more of the letters that they didn't receive notice that the 102 had been filed, just recently learning about it, not having sufficient time to review and respond to it in a comprehensive way. I would suggest to the commission, after we have our public comment time frame here, that we talk a little bit about that in terms of establishing and extending a specific time period to receive additional written public comments, and ensure that in the event that you agreed that would be a good thing to do, that we put it in our news release so we notify our Wolf Working Group or Wolf Advisory Group and other entities that we know have a particular interest in these rules. So I would just put that on the table, let it sit there, but would like to come back and talk about that a little bit after the public hearing is complete.
Okay. Sounds good. Commissioner Kenney?
Thank you. I think it was the amendment before this. I just was unclear on something. Yeah. I'm just unclear. This section applies, so you added back in Eastern Washington Recovery Region.
Right.
And those areas of the state that meet or exceed 4 breeding pairs.
Mm-hmm.
So that region now exceeds 4 breeding pairs. Why do we have to duplicate it and add it back in? I'm just curious.
That actually came up as part of the Wolf Advisory Group, and that's when we struck it. But then since then, I think some folks viewed that as going backwards, perhaps. And I'm not sure what the issue was. It was redundant. It is redundant. But because they had a concern with it, to me, redundancy was okay if it helped clarify it for folks.
Any other Director Anderson?
Sorry, just one more. So in terms of the 230-236-052, the killing wolves, attack, and domestic animals sections that's on page 13-14, could you describe the differences in the language that's in the CR 102 from the language that was in the emergency rule?
Sure. Actually, almost everything is the same or very, very similar. The difference this is one of the sections that is different. In the emergency rule, I think all we said was that it would be in applies to any area of the state where the gray wolf is listed as endangered or threatened under the Federal Endangered Species Act or something to that effect. And so now, especially with the federal proposal to delist, we wanted this rule to stand as best it could in the event that occurred. And from the perspective of several folks that we've worked with and talked with and the internal agency staff, it was felt that we would want to have some conditions on when the rule would take effect if the federal proposal to delist went into effect. And so the greatest comfort at that point was where wolves met their minimum qualifications for downlisting and delisting, which was 4 per recovery region.
So if I may just, this is an important part. So looking at Section A that's on page 14, where we're talking about the Eastern Washington piece and the meet or exceed 4 breeding pairs. So right now, the western boundary of the Eastern Washington Recovery Region is coexistent with the area that's been defined on the federal listing of endangered.
Right.
Correct?
So that Eastern Washington western boundary is the line.
Okay. So this, and maybe I'm not reading this right, but it could, if I interpret it this way, maybe someone else will. If I put the language that's struck, that's in red, and I put that back in, and that becomes language that's included in that subsection, I could read that to mean that in the Eastern Washington Recovery Region, regardless of the number of breeding pairs that are there, the rule applies. The ability to lethally take a wolf that's caught in the act of attacking is okay. That's permissible. Because it says, and those areas of the state that meet or exceed. So I don't know if that's an incorrect reading of that, or whether we're saying that this rule and the ability for someone to lethally kill a wolf that's caught in the act of attacking a domestic animal only applies in the recovery regions that meet or exceed 4 breeding pairs. So
I agree with you that the way that the language currently reads, if, for example, the Eastern Washington Recovery Region dropped below 4 breeding pairs, then it would still, under this rule, you would still be allowed to kill a wolf caught in the act of killing livestock.
And our I'm sorry to take up, if I'm taking up too much time, I apologize.
This is important.
But the only way you're going to be able to do it west of that boundary is if they're delisted federally, right?
And they meet forest.
Right. So we have, seems to me that we have a double standard here. And we need to think about why that is. Because we're saying in the eastern recovery area, it doesn't matter how many breeding pairs there are, that you could take it under those circumstances. West of that line, after the federal delisting, then the opportunity to take this action to protect a domestic animal is only if that recovery zone has met or exceeded 4 breeding pairs. I just want to make sure I was reading that correctly. It was included in several of the public comments as a concern, and it is a piece that is dissimilar from the language that was in the emergency rule.
So. Commissioner Caney.
Thank you. I think I was trying to get at that too, but I was thinking about your comment that it didn't make a difference, but I think it does make a difference and does set a double standard in my mind. But I also want to preface this with, I think the emergency rule was passed based on a lot of facts and figures and scientific information from Montana and Idaho that said this emergency rule would very seldom be used. And I think to date it hasn't been used. So that supported, you know, those facts. So we're kind of worrying, and we should worry about all of this, but we're worrying about whether, you know, it's going to have an effect on the population of wolves and the eventual recovery, and I don't believe it will. But it still should be written fairly for the state. And I think to isolate out eastern region and make it different than the rest isn't probably correct in my mind. It should be the four breeding pairs is what's good for eastern, north Cascades and south Cascades and Olympic, then that should be the way it is. Because I think you could definitely read this to say, regardless of breeding pair numbers in eastern region, you can use cod in the act. Will it have a huge effect? No. But still, to be fair, that's my thoughts on it.
Are there comments or questions for Dave before we hear public input? Nothing? Good conversation. That was helpful to me to understand that fine point. Okay, then we'll go into public input. This is a hearing. So the rules for commission testimony. I'll call you up two at a time, and I'd like you to speak into the mic. You'll have 3 minutes to testify. When you hear the beeping noise, that means your time is up, and we'd like you to conclude your remarks. Okay, I think most of you are old hands at this. Linda Saunders and Amaruk Wise, if you would come forward, please. Okay, Ms. Saunders.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Commission, for the opportunity to comment again on this issue with you. And for those of you who haven't seen me up here yet, my name is Linda Saunders. I'm the Director of Conservation at Wolf Haven International. I've had over 30 years of experience working with wildlife issues in the western United States with the federal government. And I'm also a person who raises livestock and other animals in a rural setting. I have for the last 25 years. I have to protect them often from predators, which include large domestic dogs, in my case, on a daily basis. I'm primarily focusing my comments today on the proposed amendments to WAC 232-36-030 and the new proposal 052. Washington has had a science-based wolf conservation management plan in place for over a year and a half. And one of the stated purposes of the amendments is to more closely align the wildlife conflict rules with that wolf plan. And this was accomplished on several occasions with this exercise. But there are some that deviate from the intent of the plan. And Dave alluded to this a little bit. The plan includes definitions and careful wording, including what constitutes an attack by wolves. The definition for attack in the plan is biting, wounding, or killing. And this definition clearly describes animal-to-animal contact. The proposed amendment definition for attack leaves far too much up for interpretation, making the decision of whether an attack has occurred highly subjective. Using the amendment definition for attack, what could be considered an attack by one person may be interpreted by another based on experience or comfort level as a wolf nearby. Another example is the proposed new section, the 232-36052. This new section includes language allowing killing wolves that are attacking or may attack domestic animals. The adopted wolf plan purposely did not allow for permitless caught-in-the-act wolf killing because in the early stages of wolf recovery, it simply isn't appropriate. The plan even discusses the risk of domestic dogs unattended in known wolf territories and includes recommendations on how to prevent wolf-dog conflicts. And again, the plan has clearly laid out a path to wolf recovery in Washington and emphasized prevention of conflict to enable people to learn how to live with wolves on our landscape, which is something new to most citizens here in Washington. The plan emphasizes that killing wolves should be a last resort in the early stages of wolf recovery. And the proposed new section does not support our wolf plan. Finally, it's disturbing that the proposed amendments in the new section to the existing interaction rules increase the opportunity to kill wolves, particularly when our plan clearly addresses lethal control and the issues were discussed and settled on after 4 years and hours of stakeholder involvement.
Thank you. let me call up the next person. Sorry. Ruth Musgrave, would you come forward? And Ms. Weiss?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the Commission. My name is Amarouk Weiss. I'm going to give a little bit of introduction of myself also, since I've not had the opportunity to meet each of you, nor you myself. I'm a biologist and a former attorney. I work for the Center for Biological Diversity as their West Coast Wolf Organizer, and I've been working in wolf conservation for the last 17 years. Like Linda, I also have experience in having lived in rural areas. My husband and I have lived in rural and wildlands areas of Oregon and California for the last 20 to 30 years with horses, dogs, and other animals. Our neighbors have been cattle, sheep, goats, and also other horses and donkeys, but also wild animals like bears, cougars, mountain lions, bobcats, even scorpions when we lived in Southern California, and rattlesnakes. So no stranger to the concept of what it's like to live in a wild place with domestic animals, worry about protecting them, and needing to take those safeguards. But also, on another note, no stranger also to the wolf planning process. I was on the stakeholder representative group that developed the Oregon plan in 2003 through 2005 and the follow-up legislative process. I was an advisor to a graduate student who did a public survey in Washington that then became part of the Washington Wolf Plan, and I'm now part of the California process. So my remarks here are in part really directed to this question about public opportunity to understand this commonplace period was taking place, because there has been some confusion. It seems to have been flown a little bit under the radar. That's kind of the perception. There wasn't really awareness among the public that there was an official comment period. So I really appreciate the opportunity to go back and revisit that. But I would just say on the wolf planning process, going back and taking apart the wolf plan on a piecemeal basis really endangers the public trust in the process, in participating in the public process. It also endangers the public trust in the agency's actions. I'm not going to elaborate much more on what Alinda has said other than to say that we're also very concerned and oppose these changes to the definitions of attack from a very certain standard to a highly subjective one. We're very concerned about changes that allow people to kill wolves in response to attacks on domestic animals. Again, back to the pet safeguard issue. You know, the Wolf Plan addresses many of these concerns, and I can tell you from having sat in those stakeholder types of groups that they're very thoroughly vetted. The decisions that are made and put into word in those wolf plans aren't happenstance. People thoroughly thought about whether or not wolves should be allowed to be killed under certain circumstances, and I think that you should take the face value of the Wolf Plan. It's a great plan. Our organization and seven other organizations recently petitioned the commission to make it legally enforceable, and we really encourage you to take that path as opposed to adopting any of these proposals, which greatly expand the circumstances when wolves can be killed or compensation can be paid beyond what the stakeholders agreed to. Thank you.
Story Warren, would you please come forward? Ms. Musgrave?
Hi, my name is Ruth Musgrave, Defenders of Wildlife Board since 1993. Thank you for the opportunity to comment on the wildlife interaction rules. And I, in particular, want to thank the staff of the department. I think they've worked incredibly hard on this project. And in good faith, they've communicated with us a lot, and we very much appreciate that. Defenders is a national organization with more than 1.1 million members, and including more than 36,000 in Washington State. We're a science-based advocacy organization focused on conserving and restoring native species and their habitat. Defenders ran a wolf compensation trust fund from 1987 through 2011, paying more than $1.4 million to ranchers in the region for livestock losses due to wolves. We assist ranchers across the West with non-lethal methods to minimize livestock loss from predators. This includes range riders, fencing, livestock protection dogs, alternative grazing techniques, and other methods. We've spent more than $1 million on these proactive projects since 1999, and we operate these projects in partnership with county, state, tribal and federal agencies, including Wildlife Services. We're even giving a national award at our banquet this year to the Department of Florida Fish and Wildlife Commission director for his work with us. Those of us representing the majority of the citizens of Washington worked in good faith with legislators, stakeholders, and the department last session to find a compromise that would protect the local folks who may encounter wolves and that would also allow recovery of these state and federally listed species that have wandered into our state. What we accomplished was an incredibly delicate compromise. We compromised on the term commercial for livestock. We compromised on adding domestic animals. We compromised on allowing the new provision to cover public as well as private lands. We actively supported funding for compensation to ranchers for non-lethal methods in Senate Bill 5193, with one of the broadest compensation plans in the nation. And we supported the bipartisan letter by the state legislators that requested an emergency rule to allow the killing of one wolf without a permit if the wolf was, and I quote, discovered in the act of attacking livestock. Further, the bipartisan letter referred to allowing private individuals, quote, to protect domestic animals against an actively attacking wolf. The new rule stated that if the wolf is attacking domestic animals, one wolf may be killed without a permit. But now the new proposed definition of attack is that an animal contact has occurred or is imminent and includes an animal that is in attack posture or mode. Did all the legislators who signed that letter agree to that? I think they did not. Did we agree to that? We definitely did not. This is similar to Senate Bill 5187, which we actively opposed. The new definition of attack is so broad that this delicate bipartisan compromise is unraveling. Trust is an important part of compromise, and without compromise, it is empty. The department has not followed the definitions of attack used in Idaho or Montana. Excuse me. I have reviewed those, and they are not as broad as the definition you're proposing. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Jacqueline Conquest, would you please come forward? Ms. Warren?
My name is Story Warren. I'm 14 years old. I, along with many stakeholders, was very satisfied with this rule. It sufficiently protected Washington's recovering wolf population while giving ranchers and pet owners the power they need to protect their property. That compromise allowed the shooting of a wolf discovered in the act of attacking livestock. That is the compromise all stakeholders agreed to. The department's revised definition of attack is that there is evidence to support the fact that animal-to-animal contact has occurred or is immediately imminent and the animal is in attack posture or mode. How can evidence be found to support that a wolf is in attack posture or mode? Having observed wolves in the wild, I have seen wolves walk very near prey animals and simply pass. Could that be interpreted as attack posture? The department states that the rationale for this is that it does not seem reasonable to ask a person to wait until a wolf causes physical damage to their pet or livestock until they could protect it. I agree wholeheartedly. However, protecting property does not have to be synonymous with killing wolves. Having had many encounters with wolves in the wild, I can tell you that wolves are scaredy cats. Shooting a gun in the air, running at the wolf, or even clapping and shouting should send the wolf running before it causes damage. When I'm older, I hope to make a career out of working with ranchers to coexist with wolves, hopefully in my home state of Washington. I ask that the department stick with the original compromise reached by all stakeholders. Thank you.
Very good job. Jack Fields, would you come forward? Ms. Conquest?
Hi. Thank you for this opportunity, and forgive me for becoming emotional. I've sent you my comment back in October, and I've presented the testimony here in case I forget anything. I'm a mental health therapist, and what I'm about to tell you is something that, to disclose, is something that's kind of off the chart that most would kind of, I'm sure, wondered about. The first Wedgwood pack that was murdered, her name was Layla. She actually came to me psychically. And when she did, 5 minutes later, I jumped on the internet. She led me to what actually went down in her pack, being gunned down with the self-interest of cattle that has been going on and on and on. I could talk about Ken Salazar, 10th, 7th generation cattle baron. This is outrageous. It needs to stop. It's really time for us to live one with the environment. The wolf, just like ourselves, is part of our environment, our ecosystem, ourselves, our hearts. Tens upon thousands of Americans have cried out to leave the wolves alone. They're our heart. They're our land. And when you think about the implication that if we can't allow wolves to live, that really threatens our own survival. You look at globally, this is just a microscope of what is happening globally upon our planet. I'm very concerned about the new amendments, particularly the fact that someone could be subjectively deducing whether or not a wolf is going to attack an animal is preposterous, given the conflict of interest of cattle ranchers, hunters, anyone with an excuse. I am very grateful that we can speak here. And I just pray in my heart that one day all can really come to that place of being in the heart and realize we're all connected. There really is no separation. There is no division. So I speak for Layla and her wedge pack that was murdered and all the wolves. And I pray that one day we can all remove our lens and see through the eyes of the wolf. They really understand that their heartbeat is just as important as ours. That you really embrace the beauty of the wolf. Thank you.
Thank you. Bob McCoy, would you come forward, please?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the Commission. For the record, Jack Field, Executive Vice President of the Washington Cattlemen's Association. Welcome new members to the Commission. First of all, here in strong support of the proposed WACs, with a few questions on a couple of the amendments, but to give just a little bit of background and sideboard to the discussion, this is to get to the point where we are did not come lightly at all. This was the process of some extensive discussions, a wide level of negotiations on all sides. Nobody got anything in terms of all or none on one side or the other, and this emergency rule represents a wide number of folks and groups coming together to come up with a solution. The important thing, and Commissioner Keeney pointed this out, in the NRM, and that was the basis, that's the Northern Rocky Mountain Recovery Region, this rule was only used three times over a 25-year period. They effectively recovered 1,715 wolves, or excuse me, 1,716 wolves in the NRM over that process, having to remove 1,514 problem wolves along the way. So unfortunately, to recover wolves, it means being able to effectively manage and control problem wolves. To further compound that, Director Anderson had brought up the fact, questioning about where this rule would be applicable. My recommendation would be to have this simply written that the rule apply to any federally delisted recovery region that has obtained four breeding pair. Otherwise, when we get to the point, we have a proposed federal delisting right now for the lower 48 minus the Mexican DPS, that when that goes through, we may be back before you requesting the same authority in regions in the North Cascades or the South Cascades and Northwest Coast when we obtain that four breeding pair objective. I would also like to remind folks that this is not an open-ended rule, that it's important that we discuss, and everybody, whether they're here or watching on TVW, understand that there's another aspect to this rule, that once a landowner or rancher, if they use this, which I think is, as Commissioner Keeney pointed out, is highly unlikely, they are required to contact the department within 24 hours, surrender the carcass, and allow the department to come on and conduct a full investigation. If that individual is unable to prove the burden of proof that that animal was in the act of attacking or posing an imminent threat, they have just illegally taken a listed species. I don't know, I have yet to see the Department of Fish and Wildlife look the other way on illegal take of any species. We could spend the next 2 weeks talking about the great work the enforcement program does simply on game animals alone. So I fully understand the concern about moving too quickly, too fast, but we also need to realize that we've got a very solid program. We have very reputable enforcement agents that do not take their job or the protection of our state's wildlife lightly. So this is not just giving a clear pass to a landowner to protect their property. What the rule does do is that it gives landowners the peace of mind that in the event that they do find an animal damaging their livestock or domestic pet, they have the ability to protect it. I would urge your adoption of this WAC and be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Director Anderson?
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure I understood your testimony clearly. The way I interpreted your testimony is it referenced, it spoke to the areas that exceeded the four breeding pairs in the federal delisting piece, was that the staff recommendation that would reinstate the Eastern Washington Recovery Region, that your recommendation would that we continue to have that deleted.
Correct.
So that it applies, the rule would apply to those areas that have met or exceeded the four breeding pairs and was federally delisted.
That is correct.
Is that correct?
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Jeff Hamm, please come forward. Okay, Mr. McCoy.
Hello, I'm Bob McCoy from Sammamish, Washington. See a lot of familiar faces and some new ones, so welcome. We'll become old friends, I'm sure. I agree with the substantive statements of biodiversity defenders and Wolf Haven, so I won't really replay all those. I've been a proponent of sticking with the plan that we have, and I am concerned both about the changing of the definition of an attack. The old one, I know it seems unreasonable to wait till a wolf is biting something to say it's in attack mode, but statistics show that wolves go through fields with prey animals, and I think in Minnesota it was like 28% of the time. So there's really needs to be some type of contact. I think it would be fairly difficult, as others noted, to show that a wolf had the attitude or posture of wanting to attack. I'm concerned about the opening up to what essentially amounts to domestic pets. Where I live, we have a wide variety of wildlife, many of which will eat animals. They're carnivores, and so most of us keep our pets in. That seems to be our idea. The other thing is, it appears to me that the rule changes seem to stress a lethal take, a lead to the head versus let's be preventative in the first place, which I think was what the permits were about originally. Was I'm in wolf territory now, I'm going to take actions, I'm going to show the department. The department says, boy, if they get through your Maginot line here ahead, you should be allowed to continue the defense. And one thing, and I don't know about this because I'm not a gun owner, but I do know with our ever-popular Karelian Bear Dog program, they have cracker shells, they have rubber bullets, they make life miserable for a trapped mountain lion or a trapped bear that's being hazed back out of a town. And I'm just curious if there's been any look to carrying some noise-making shells if you're in wolf territory, and trying something preventative, scaring the wolf before it starts biting, because there is no law against that I'm aware of. So anyhow, thank you for your time, and let's all hope the freeways have cleared up since this afternoon's drive.
Thank you. Mr. Hamm?
Yeah, my name is Jeff Hamm.
Hamm.
And I also live up in Sammamish and watched a lot of changes happen over the years. I've lived there all my life. And at one time, we were really out in the country also. And as time has changed, when it comes to the domestic animals, we have to keep our animals inside. Just we have to do preventative things because there's not as much stuff available for those animals to go after. And I think giving people the opportunity to be able to shoot an animal just because they think they're going to do something, you know, normal human behavior is going to take the easy route. I think the past rigs that were proposed made more sense than just allowing somebody just to say, okay, that animal's going to go after my animal, so I'm going to take care of it right now. I just think that this change isn't the best bet, because I just feel personally, like I said, human behavior is going to take the easiest route out, and wolves are coming back. And people have to learn how to live with the wolves, not just try and get rid of them. You see this, I'm a member of a fishing and hunting club, and I'm not a hunter, but I'm a fisherman. And every time I broach the subject of wolves, I have this big negative feedback from all those that like to hunt. And you see, you feel the same thing from the ranchers and such, same type of thing. We all have to live together and figure it out. It's a change, and we all have to keep going through change, and that's about what I have to say.
Thank you. Well, very interesting testimony. Thanks to everyone signed up and provided us with their thoughts. Appreciate it very much. Now let's address the issue of the extension of the public comment period. Does this require a formal action by the commission? I wouldn't think so. No.
Not necessarily, but I wouldn't discourage it either. I've had an opportunity, Madam Chair, members of the commission, I've had an opportunity to talk with both Dave Ware a little bit, as well as your legal advisor, Bill Freimeyer. I feel strongly and strongly recommend to you that we extend the public comment period, written public comment period on this issue. My recommendation is that we continue to accept written public comments on this issue through the end of business on Friday, September 21st. That gives us an opportunity to, as staff, to take a look and review all those public comments. Obviously, we'll be doing that as they come in, and consider that in terms of any recommendations that we might make to you for changes in the 102. up to and including everything that we've heard here today and prior to today. This would not include, my recommendation does not include another public comment period. So this extension of the public comment period would provide organizations and individuals an additional 6 weeks or so to provide written comments to the commission. Obviously, Tammy will work hard to make sure that you receive any and all of the written comments that we would receive between now and then, as well as staff having an opportunity to take a look at them in a comprehensive way and think through them prior to coming back to the commission in October with any changes to the 102 that we might recommend that you consider.
Okay, so Dave, did you have something to add?
I made a mistake in looking at the calendar. It's actually Friday, September 20th, by close of business.
Oh. Okay. September 20th?
20th, okay.
Close of business?
You're sure.
For written comments, but as I understood you to say, we will not have another public hearing.
Well, that's my recommendation. Obviously, we don't have another commission meeting between now and October. I do think our constituents that are used to engaging with this issue oftentimes write to the commission their thoughts, and I think as long as we always do, assure them that their comments will be looked at, carefully read, and considered. That's the important thing. So, as I know you always do.
Okay. Commissioner Carpenter.
Having heard that, I'd propose a motion that we extend the written comments on the Wolf issue until the close of business Friday, September 20th, 2013.
Do I hear a second? The motion's been seconded by Commissioner Schmitten to extend the written public comment period until September 20th. 2013, end of business. Any further discussion? Commissioner Kenney?
I just had one question on the emergency rule. Will it run out in the time frame? And, I mean, when is there an absolute time frame at which we have to make a permanent rule out of the emergency rule?
Madam Chair, Commissioner Kenney, an emergency rule has a life of 120 days. It can be extended for an additional 120 days, I think, provided that there's a permanent rule process in place. We structured the timing for the consideration of the commission of these rules such that we would not have to extend the emergency rule for another 120 days. How is that not true? I'm getting the.
I think that was our original intent, but as it turns out, the emergency is going to run out later this month, in the month of August. So we're going to have a second one.
So we will be extending the emergency rule, but doing it a third time, I don't think is an option for us. So that does put the onus on the commission to make a decision, at least on that portion of this rule, at your meeting in October.
Thank you.
Any other comments or questions? We have a motion before us to extend the written public comment period till September 20th. All those in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed, say no. Motion carries. Okay. Thank you all. I think that's the end of the business for today. So we'll go into recess. What time do we come back tomorrow? 8:30. We start at 8:30 tomorrow morning. Same place. Same people.
No.
Oh, no. Commissioner Smith is leaving us. Thanks, everyone.